CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. This is Hotel Mars, Episode N, with David Livingston, my colleague and co-pilot. We're headed to low Earth orbit in our imaginations in the near future. We welcome Eric Berger of Ars Technica, and I read from a filing on our imaginary low Earth orbit roost. The sprawling International Space Station is nearer the end of its life than at the beginning. Time is running out to replace the station before it's gone. And therefore, we turn to an imaginary future. The imaginary future is a space station, a private space station, to be constructed by and for the wealthiest man in the solar system, depending upon the day. That would be Jeff Bezos of Amazon formerly, but now of Blue Origin. One space station passes away, built by states, sovereign powers. Another space station rises in our imagination. Eric, a very good evening to you. Thank you for this, for picturing this as a transformation of low Earth orbit. What is it that Mr. Bezos, Blue Origin, and his new colleagues are proposing to build? How is it going to be used from what we understand of the plans? Good evening to you, Eric.
Good evening. So the International Space Station, as you said, is nearing the end of its lifetime, and so NASA has decided that the way to replace this is with the commercially built space station. So they've started, you know, the process of awarding grants to design, for design studies, and eventually for, you know, to help construct and crew these space stations. And it's not just Jeff Bezos and his Orbital Reef project. There's a bunch of other entrants as well. A company called Axiom Space is involved, and they're building their space station, or they have their design. Lockheed Martin and NanoRacks have a design, and probably we're going to see some other competitors as well. But certainly Bezos, with Orbital Reef, is proposing the largest space station. It would be 90% the size of the International Space Station, which is this huge football field-sized facility in low Earth orbit.
And this proposal right now, you say, it leads in the opinion of observers, but there are others to come along. So this is early days of space station construction. We're looking at a boom in low Earth orbit.
Yeah, it's a pretty uncertain future because, A, we don't really know when NASA and the international partners behind the space station are going to give it up. It could be 2028, it could be 2030, or it could even be later than that. NASA has not been awarded a whole lot of funding from Congress yet, so it's incumbent upon these private companies to spend money up front. And some are more willing to do that than others. And then we have to see if there's actually a market for this. I mean, is NASA and maybe a few other international space agencies going to be the only customers, or will they find commercial markets? I think these are three of the big unknowns that we have right now.
David?
If NASA extends the life of the ISS, does it delay the commercial entries, or can they come online even with the ISS still in play?
Well, the plan is to come online before the ISS goes away so that there is no space station gap. As you know, the ISS has been flying for more than 20 years now, and NASA would like to keep some sort of destination up there, especially with the Chinese and their Tiangong space station that's now up there. So all these companies are basically penciling in 2030 as the end date for the space station. If Congress were to come along and say, we want you to fly space station until 2035, then that would throw a wrench into these plans for sure.
The Blue Origin proposal involves other companies, startups, other nations. There looks to be a networking here. This could be a positive development because networking often creates other opportunities. Is that already a success then, Eric, in the community's opinion?
I think there's some skepticism in the community, John, because we saw a similar approach when Blue Origin was bidding on the human lander for the Artemis Moon program. They put together the so-called national team, which had three other major players and sort of represented a fusion of kind of old space and new space. That so far has been unsuccessful. They've been drawn into a lawsuit against NASA, and have not covered themselves in glory, I think it's fair to say, with the human lander. So now comes along the Orbital Reef proposal, which has Blue Origin, Sierra Space, Boeing, Redwire, and a couple other entities. And it's kind of another team of up-and-coming and established players. I think the jury is out on whether they'll be able to fuse a cohesive team this time around.
David?
I'm a little bit confused about orbital reef because they want to have a hotel and other functions, for example. So in a business park, you know, the landlord, overall landlord, rents out the cubicles or the modules to companies to do what they want within the confines of the planning. Are they planning to lease out modules, like to a hotel module, or do it themselves? Do you know what their plans are for all these features that they want to offer?
Well, there was a press conference held a couple of weeks ago in Dubai where they discussed some of these issues, and they were pretty vague about that. It seems like Blue Origin is going to build kind of the main central module, and then you could stick other things onto that. So yes, if someone wanted to build a hotel, they could have a hotel module. If someone wanted to put a scientific research or laboratory there, they could do that. And I think the partnership approach Blue Origin has taken is smart in this way, because new companies or organizations can come aboard, and you could have a Canadian Space Agency module or something like that on their space station.
I can review what I know about science fiction, and it's the scene in 2001, En route to the moon. Our heroes, our inquirers, stop at a space station in low Earth orbit. Is this part of the imagining that's going on now, commercializing, monetizing low Earth orbit and space stations?
So NASA isn't explicitly stating that. They have been averse to the idea of building up your spacecraft in low Earth orbit and then going on from there. I do think the private companies definitely see it this way. So how it might work is you would launch on, you know, let's say these space stations come online in 5 or 10 years. You know, by that time, especially SpaceX's Falcon 9 and Crew Dragon vehicles are going to be very well established. You know, they should have a long track record, you know, of having flown maybe 40 or 50 missions with people on board, and hopefully a good safety record. So the safest way to get into space would be to launch from there to one of these low Earth orbit space stations. And then you might have a transfer craft that would take you from low Earth orbit to lunar orbit. And then another vehicle in lunar orbit that would go down to the moon's surface. So I think while NASA hasn't officially said that, there's a general sense in the community that that's where we're headed.
And that is, when you say community, you mean all of these private enterprises imagine that as well. They're not averse to talking about how 2001 is a model for me.
No, I think both publicly and privately, they'll talk about sort of the presence of tugs and things like that. I mean, I know Blue Origin is in fact working on a in-space tug that might perform such a function.
David?
Is there any indication that Mr. Bezos is willing to pour in a lot of his own money up front to make this happen rather than to work on investor money or other people's money, especially when the markets are so vague?
Yeah, so Brent Sherwood, who's the company's vice president of advanced development projects or programs at Blue Origin, was there. He was asked this several different ways, and his response was that, look, this space station will be launched by New Glenn, and that rocket is being almost entirely privately funded by Jeff Bezos, and so that's a huge commitment. And he said that there was some in-house work being done on the space station module. But there's no question in my mind that the orbital reef program is premise on NASA eventually stepping up and funding a lot of the development work.
China's involved in low Earth orbit and has great plans for the moon as well. Is there a space station race, Eric?
I don't think we see it as a race between the United States and China in the sense that the U.S. and Russia have had a space station for 20 years. The bigger plan or sort of the bigger picture is that we don't want there to be a gap. Right. So we don't want to have a situation where the ISS has to be deorbited in 2028. And then China is the only place in the world that has a space station. I do think there's kind of a race between these private spaceflight companies, though, among themselves to refine their concepts, secure private funding, and then win these NASA grants.
One more question, David. Go ahead.
You, with all of your work in space and your tentacles out there for news and information, do you see something that looks like a real market developing for this, and what would that market area be?
You know, it's hard to say. I have never seen a compelling study that has shown there's this vibrant low Earth orbit market. But I will say I'm cautiously optimistic now after seeing what's happened with suborbital space tourism. It does seem like there are lots of people with lots of money sort of lining up to go up into space. And there's now quite a bit of demand, I think, for SpaceX for its orbital tourism missions. So I think between the demand for private people to go to space and spend a couple weeks on the space, on a space station, that would be pretty cool. And then there is, I think eventually we'll find some killer apps for microgravity in terms of either building biopharmaceuticals or, you know, high temperature superconductors. I mean, I don't know what the, what that market will be, but I do think we'll find some economic activity that, that benefits, you know, up there. And then finally, you know, there will be opportunities here for countries like UAE, or Brazil or emerging space nations who maybe want to buy rides for their astronauts to go up to these private space stations, you know, independent of NASA where they can do their own thing and go to space. So I think there's enough of a market, but I still think that NASA is going to be the primary customer for a long time, and sort of their willingness to spend on these commercial, it's called commercial LEO destinations, you know, their willingness to spend on that will drive this activity.
Eric Berger, senior space editor, Ars Technica. I recommend the site, filled with information. David Livingston, Dr. Space, Hotel Mars, Episode N. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART, or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.